Welcome, everyone, to the first episode of State House Watch Radio for the 2021 legislative session here in Concord, New Hampshire. My name is Maggie Fogarty. I'm the director of the American Friends Service Committee New Hampshire program. AFSC has been bringing you State House Watch Radio for about 8 years. The show was founded by my then co-worker, Arnie Alpert, who retired from AFSC at the end of June of 2020. And so now as we step into this new season, we find it's going to take multiple partners to fill the seat that Arnie has left empty. So we want to start off this first show by giving you a sense of some of the wonderful new co-hosts that we'll have for State House Watch Radio. But first, I want to be sure you know how you can listen every week. So you obviously figured out how to do it this time. Maybe you're listening at 94.7 FM radio in Concord. Maybe you went to the WNHNFM.org website to listen to us streaming while the show was playing. Or perhaps you found this podcast under the State House Watch section of that website. Our show airs on Mondays at 5 p.m., and is rebroadcast on Tuesday mornings at 8 a.m. Ever since COVID really hit our state, we've been recording our shows in various video conferencing studios. So we're not coming directly from WNHN, but we are coming to you as best we can. The radio program is a companion piece to AFSC's State House Watch newsletter. Subscribe if you haven't already done so. So many people tell us that State House Watch newsletter is how they keep track of the literally hundreds of bills making their ways through various committees and votes and studies and second committees throughout a very busy legislative season. So go to our website, afsc.org/NH. On the right-hand side, you'll see a subscribe button, and the newsletter will end up in your mailbox on Friday evenings, and it will give you your whole map for the week ahead. So now let's hear a little bit from our other co-hosts. I want to first introduce my wonderful co-worker, Grace Kindeke. Hi, Grace.
Hi, Maggie. So happy to be here. Hi, everyone. My name is Grace Kindeke. I'm the program coordinator at the American Friends Service Committee New Hampshire program, working with Maggie here in our state capital. I'm also a long-term resident of Manchester, New Hampshire. I was born in the Congo and came to the United States when I was 2 years old. And besides a brief stint in Boston for 5 years, I've been living in Manchester pretty much back to back. I'm also a dancer, an artist, a community activist, and an organizer. And I'm also a student of Africana Studies and Sociology at UMass Boston. I'd like to turn it over to our other co-host, Emmett Soldati.
Thank you, Grace. Emmett Soldati here. I'm a proud townie of Somersworth, New Hampshire. I've been a small business owner here for about 10 years since I moved back home to my hometown. I'm a community organizer, and I've also found a way to be politically active across this state. And I look forward to coming to you every single month to talk about the journeys in our small towns. And I'd like to introduce another fabulous co-host, Jennifer Duby.
Hi, all. I'm thrilled to be here today and to be part of this program. My name's Jennifer Duby, and I'm a climate organizer with 350NH. 350NH is a climate justice organization that's working towards a just transition to a renewable energy economy and to end our society's dependence on fossil fuels. Our mission is to stop the climate crisis by building grassroots support for a just transition to renewable energy and an end to fossil fuel use and expansion. We envision a society with a renewable energy economy that works for all people.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, Jennifer and Emmett and Grace, for saying yes to being a part of this State House Watch Radio team. Let's give our listeners an idea of what they can expect to hear from our shows. So, Grace, do you want to talk about our show and what we intend to focus on?
Definitely. So we at AFSC are, because we are a 100-year-old Quaker organization dedicated to racial, economic, and social justice and peace, we'll be watching the State House closely to make sure to be focused on immigration, housing, criminal justice reform, education, and workers' rights bills that make their way through the State House. And especially right now, this year, it being a state budget year, we'll be looking really closely at that as well.
That's right. And we'll be like everybody else, figuring out how people can make their voices heard on those issues, especially because COVID will be forcing committee hearings to be remote. It's very unclear what House sessions are going to look like after a rather awkward start on convening day. The Senate seems to have figured out that Zoom sessions work quite well for getting their business done, but we're about trying to promote people's involvement in these decision-making processes so that voices are heard. Emmett, what can listeners to your program expect to hear you talking about?
Well, I always think about how my own values has been shaped by the lived experience of living in New Hampshire's littlest city on the margin here in our state. And so I'm going to take our listeners outside of Concord to dispel myths and uncover truths about New Hampshire's smallest spaces and share stories of how we can build community in our main streets and our neighborhoods, whether in rural New Hampshire or on the margins of New Hampshire. And I think we'll find some shared values wherever we go in this state.
And bringing your expertise as a business owner, your assessment of the policies needed at the State House also is a really important voice, right?
When we talk about business, we really need to think about what are our main streets doing? What are our local and regional economies doing, particularly as we look ahead to recover from many of the ways we've had seen losses in our home communities from COVID. And I think there's some real champions out there in terms of in the main street world. And they're going to be paying very close attention to how this State House really responds to the needs to make sure that that vibrancy comes back to our small towns and our small economies. It's all going to come down to what happens in Concord.
And might you be one of those small business voices in support of higher wages?
Exactly. And I think this is so crucial that we have small businesses at the table with so many progressive causes. I've seen in my own experience, particularly in a small and property poor space like Somersworth, that the policies that we espouse really do benefit businesses like mine, but more importantly, communities like mine. But we're not always making those connections. And so I'm going to be very excited to talk with other business owners and talk with other folks across our state to help really connect the dots for the things that we are fighting for and believe in to make sure it becomes a reality for all of us.
Thank you, Emmett. So Jennifer, give us a sense of what the priorities you'll be looking at this coming year, what you intend to focus on and want to educate listeners about.
So I'm going to be hosting our segment with Peg Brault and others co-hosts from the 350 NH outreach team. And our segment is going to be focusing on the planks of the NH Renews platform, which are housing, healthcare, food access, transportation, energy, and clean air and water. And we're going to be tying all of those issues to the climate crisis that we are fighting. So NH Renews, it's a grassroots statewide coalition that formed to fight for a just and equitable future for the Granite State, and it's launching publicly Thursday on the 14th.
And your first show will be right after that launch on Martin Luther King Day, January 18th. So you can give listeners an idea of how that launch went, who the partners are in that coalition, and what will be coming up first as that coalition engages. Thanks, Jennifer.
Thank you.
As you can hear, we've got a lot planned for you, and we're going to bring a lot of energy to this coming year. So keep tuning in on Mondays at 5 p.m. or Tuesday mornings at 8 a.m. or anytime you want via the website, either for streaming or for the podcasts. We're going to go to a musical break now, and when we come back, Grace and I have decided to start the year off with a conversation with State Representative Rennie Cushing, who is now serving as the minority leader in the House of Representatives. And we cover a broad range of issues and priorities for the coming year. So it's important here, though, I want to thank Fred Portnoy from the team at WNHN, who helps us to take these interviews and recordings and stitch them together so that what you listen to now is a smooth and seamless show. So thank you, Emmett and Grace and Jennifer, for making sure we get off to a good start this year. Tune in every week to State House Watch Radio.
And now we're listening to the underrated but incredibly talented Sista Solja, 360 Degrees of Power.
House Watch Radio. I'm Maggie Fogarty with the American Friends Service Committee and here with my colleague and co-worker.
Hi everyone, I'm Grace Kendeke, Program Coordinator with the American Friends Service Committee.
We're in the Zoom studio today with our friend, State Representative Rennie Cushing, who is beginning his, we believe, seventh term in the New Hampshire House of Representatives and this time with additional leadership responsibility. So welcome to State House Watch Radio.
Thanks, Maggie. It's great
to
be here.
See you.
I think it's my seventh term, but it's been spread over five decades, so it's hard to keep track.
That's a good way to do it, don't you think?
Yeah, once upon a time, I was a young Democrat. Now I'm kind of a living fossil.
An elder, as they say.
I have aspirations to be an elder as a, kind of like as an aging revolutionary and fading romantic. It's a good thing to aspire to.
Well, the session is off to kind of a wild start. The House and Senate convened for the 2021 session on January 6th in the morning. I happened to watch a very efficient Senate session over Zoom. I think they completed their business in about an hour and a half, but it was a little bit different on the House side. Rennie, can you describe what convening day was like for the House members? How did it happen?
Well, convening day for House members took place drive-in movie style.
in a parking lot in Durham, adjacent to the railroad tracks, with a drive-in movie style screen and a stage set up with people parked in their cars, with representatives parked in their cars, tuning in on their radio dial or on their transistor radio to a special radio station that had been set up so that we could conduct our business. People honked their horn sometimes. They would flick their lights to get recognized. If someone wanted to talk, they would text to the clerk of the House of Representatives who would recognize them. You know, staff people would zoom up and down the aisles on golf carts to deliver portable mics on booms to people. This whole setup was done specifically to avoid the possibility that the legislature, the House of Representatives, would do what every other business, what schools throughout the state, throughout the nation do, other legislators do, and that is meet remotely.
Why couldn't they reach agreement to do this first session that way? I don't understand. The Senate seems to have reached a different conclusion. So,
well, it's different. One of the things is that, you know, we recognize that we're at the height of a pandemic that's been raging across this country, across the globe for 10 months now. And yet there are some people who are science deniers, some people who deny that COVID exists. There are people, notwithstanding the fact that, a week after he was sworn in December, the previous Speaker of the House died of COVID. People deny that that took place. There are people who believe that they have a right, no respect for the commons, no respect for other people. They think that they have a right to infect others and refuse to wear masks and somehow conflate inconvenience with oppression. And there is a group, a solid block of Republicans who hold sway over the rest of the majority party. And therefore, rather than meet the concerns of people who want to comport with the mental health, with the physical health directives, with public health, they just cater to the people who believe that COVID is a hoax and we don't have to wear masks.
And is it your view that the New Hampshire Supreme Court had already authorized remote meetings as a legal accommodation to the pandemic?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, there were people who raised an objection saying that you have to meet in person, otherwise it violates the Constitution. So the legislature actually asked the Supreme Court that question. The Supreme Court answered it, even though after listening to the arguments that were made by people who raised the objection to meeting remotely, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments on that, but they just took the position that the New Hampshire Constitution prohibited it. And the Supreme Court said, no, you can do that. And therefore, take a look at it. This, the same Constitution that governs the House governs the Senate. The Senate had no problem recognizing the Senate president just called the Senate to into session and announced that it was going to meet remotely, and it did. The same time, the same day, the House can't do that. The House leadership refused to do that. And so we met in this elaborate Rube Goldberg style convening, in this parking lot, 7 acres. It's in the middle.
And how would you say it worked?
It kind of worked like how a catalytic converter works on a 1957 Chevy. I mean, it can work, but it doesn't really do what it's intended, what it's intended to do. It was more of a kind of a sideshow, I think, to be honest. People are dying at a rate it's only that is, if people deny that that happens, it's an insult to the 350,000 people whose lives have been lost, and it trivializes, and that's where the real trivialization is takes place.
That's
but
right.
We proceeded with the rules that we can. We have some people who just couldn't do it. You know, it's like totally
who could not be there at all.
Could not be there for health reasons.
Do you have a sense, Rennie, of how many people were not able to participate yesterday who would have?
Easily a couple dozen people. We're at a time when we're still telling restaurants, we're telling school, we're telling people we don't do these large public gatherings.
And constituents of those several dozens of representatives who couldn't be there are disenfranchised by that callousness as well.
They're disenfranchised. But at the end of the day, this is just a political decision that was made. A decision to the extent that we can, because we are the majority, we can do whatever we want to disenfranchise the people who aren't of the same political persuasion that we are. There was a claim by the Republicans that they couldn't meet remotely because the rules don't allow for that. We don't have rules that allow for it. So the Democrats brought forward a motion to amend the House rules to provide that they could meet in remote session. And the legislature majority promptly turned that down.
And an attempt by you and was it Representative Osborne to make a statement about what was happening in Washington?
Yeah. I mean, during the middle, you know, in the afternoon, as it became known, we did offer a joint resolution that passed. What was interesting, though, or sad, is that there were people who opposed that. I mean, I don't know if there's a recorded vote, but certainly there was a lot of discontent. But, you know, at the same time, the legislature or the majority is refusing to meet remotely like every other legislature in the country and our own state Senate does. It was also refusing to allow the code of ethics to be amended to specifically identify, you know, hate speech as a grounds for an ethical violation of a legislature. It was also refusing to reenact a rule that would provide for unconscious bias and racial profiling training. At the same time, it was refusing to adopt rules to for sexual harassment prevention. At the same time, it was adopting rules to prohibit, you know, drinking during legislative sessions. And it turned down an effort to try to regulate firearms on the floor of the House. So the message that came out of it is that, you know, all, that the Republicans, what they want to do is just kind of sit around in Reps Hall and drink beer and play with their guns.
And so what can we expect in terms of how the House is going to meet for subsequent sessions and for committee hearings?
That really is up to the Republican majority at this point. And it has been since, you know, since they assumed power. And what's really clear is that, you know, right now they have the power to do it. You know, it in a way, it almost breaks my heart when I get up this morning. And not only did I read of the horror about what was taking place in Washington, but then I also read the coverage in the New York Times, the New York Times article that covered New Hampshire's convening of the legislature. And just to know that we were gaining this national notoriety for, you know, drive-in legislating and listening to the voices of legislators who deny that COVID-19 is a problem, that it exists.
Just lastly, on this part, I want to mention that there were some important elections held in the convening day session. And congratulations to you for being elected minority leader for the New Hampshire House.
I was elected minority leader a couple of weeks after the last election. A month ago, a week after he was elected and sworn in, Speaker Hinch passed on from COVID. So the way the House rules work under the vacancy is within 30 days, they have to have a new election for Speaker. And I stood for Speaker as the Democratic candidate. And Sharon Packard, who was the acting Speaker and the former Deputy Speaker under Mr. Hinch, Representative Hinch, he also stood for office. And so we had an election for Speaker that I think represented kind of two different visions for what the state of New Hampshire is all about. I mean, I tried to articulate what a legislature might look like, having a Democrat in control, and talked a lot about the needs for us to, you know, protect and lift up public education, about the needs for us to be concerned to continue fighting this COVID pandemic and unite behind it, not to get distracted by questions of fake science and, you know, deniers that the pandemic is doing the damage that it is. And, you know, talk about our need to unite behind that. And, you know, going beyond about the need for us to kind of protect the commons. You know, we have to protect our air that we all breathe in. We have to protect our water that we all drink. You have to protect the soil that you walk upon. And also more than just the, you know, that the commons are like what the core of our, you know, of our state rest upon in many ways. I think there are those who, if they had their way, would take and turn the town commons into the town privates, if you will.
Absolutely.
And you know, anyhow, I think, but also try to make an appeal to work in unity, to find common ground across the aisle. There are many things that we can, I think that Republicans and Democrats could agree on. Among them, criminal justice reform. There's an important opening now to do that because here we are in the state of New Hampshire. As I mentioned, I mentioned in my speech for to speaker that we're there at the university campus meeting, and in a place where the state of New Hampshire spends $80 million a year on the state university system. That's $80 million in general fund dollars. And $123 million a year on the Department of Corrections, you know, and it's just not sustainable for us as a society, as a state, to be spending for every $1 we spend on a college classroom, we spend, $1.53 on jail cells.
I want to pass things over to Grace for a few questions about the work to be done this year.
Wake up, New York.
And now we're listening to Wake Up Everybody by John Legend, The Roots, and featuring Melanie Fiona and Common. This is a cover of the 1975 song by Harold Melvins and the Blue Notes.
Wake up everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more backward thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There is so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, oh yeah.
Wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. 'Cause they're the ones who's coming up and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. Again, just you and me.
Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all
and
the
hell.
They don't have so very long before their judgment day.
Oh.
So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Oh yeah.
Just for the breath of life, I thank my maker. My mom say I come from hustlers and shakers. My mind building on skyscrapers and acres. He said, take us back to where we belong. I try to write a song as sweet as the Psalms. Though I'm the type to bear arms and wear my heart on my sleeve. Even when I fail in God, I believe. Read the days and weave through the maze. And the seas are so amazing. Feed them and raise them. Seasons are aging. Earthquakes, wars, and rumors. I want us to divide, but we more than consumers. We more than shooters. More than looters, created in his image, so God lived through us. And even in this generation, living through computers, only love can reboot us. Come on,
oh, wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. Oh, wake up, everybody.
You're listening to Statehouse Watch on WNHN LP 94.7 FM and WNHNFM.org.
Absolutely. And with the, you know, with the effects of the pandemic and the challenges of this legislature, like, what do you see, Rennie, as the priorities for the legislature in 2021? Does that include the education? Does it include, you know, rebalancing those dollars from, you know, from corrections to education?
Yeah, I think that's, those are ongoing challenges. I mean, the first challenge, I think, obviously, is we have to deal with a pandemic. We can't exacerbate things. We can't pretend it doesn't exist. And we can't exempt people from, you know, having respect for the public health. That's a huge battle. It shouldn't be, but unfortunately, that's a battle that we have and continue to have. And, you know, death rates are escalating. The pandemic's escalating at a time, even though there's a promise of vaccines on the horizon, we can't take our eyes off of that. And for too long, we shouldn't be fighting over whether there's a pandemic and whether the COVID-19 exists. We should just be figuring out what's the best way for us to bring it to an end. You know, and having dealt with that, we still have to deal with the underlying problems that existed before the pandemic hit, exactly. Which includes, from my perspective, you know, questions dealing with how we educate people. I think there's kind of you know, going to be a little bit of a war, if you will, on public education that's underway. And in a, you know, desire to divert public dollars into, you know, private pockets that don't meet the needs of the children of our state.
Do you see that happening at multiple levels in education in the state, or is it more concentrated, say, in, you know, in the younger grades, or is this also in the university systems?
I think it's across the board, quite frankly. I mean, I do think, and input across the board, and also, you know, a way that, you know, when I think of education, I just don't think of brick and mortar schools. I think of how we deal with, you know, with people as whole beings, with children as a whole being. The fact that, for instance, you know, just the same day we went in session, you know, the state of New Hampshire was just sued for what it did, what it is not doing for, you know, a vulnerable population of, you know, older children, you know, if you will, through its, you know, its practice of failure to provide for the needs and just keep holding them in a institutional setting, and not providing the resources. That just is one of many problems that popped out. But, you know, we still have, you know, we don't do pre-K, we don't provide, you know, an elementary school. We starve our, you know, we limit, consciously limit our ability to fund public education, and then shift the blame for the state, the legislature shifts the blame for not providing an adequate education onto the local communities, and at the same time limits the ability of communities to capture revenues to support the very institution it is. We should not live in a state where the quality of education is determined by the zip code of the community, that every child in the state should have an equal opportunity and equal access to a quality education. But, you know, I think we're going to see a rollback. You know, last year under the Democrats, for the first time, we provided additional revenue to education to communities throughout the state. I think there's a chance that's going to be rolled back, that we're going to, you know, take money away from education. And at the same time, you know, we're probably attempts to undermine additional revenue sources that the state desperately needs in order to create and maintain a society that works for everybody. So at all different levels, this problem is education. We have an ongoing problem. You know, this COVID-19 has masked and exacerbated our, you know, problems related to the opioid crisis. It's, you know, it's exacerbated problems related to homelessness. It's exacerbated problems related to domestic violence. I mean, I just, you know, what has taken place from talking to domestic violence advocates is just, you know, we can't see it, but it's there. And when I say we can't see it, because COVID just overwhelms everything else, because people are, you know, locked down and don't know. Well, when you're locked down in situations and you're locked down with people who harm you.
Yeah, and it's absolutely. And as you said, you know, COVID has revealed a lot of the fault lines that were already there. And you, as the way that we allocate our money is definitely an indication of where our state's priorities are. And so, you know, what are you seeing with our, like, our tax structure and the ways that that has impacted education, and you know, and how, you know, how can we make changes in our criminal justice system in order to be able to allocate, you know, better allocate our public funds to better support these services and education opportunities?
I will take those as two different questions. I think we have a tax structure that's really antiquated. It's primarily regressive, and it's designed really to kind of exacerbate the you know, income inequality in the state. I'll just put it straight. We want to make New Hampshire a haven for income inequality, which I think that's in many ways it's a cultural thing that we have to deal with as much as a legal question. And we're not going to, I think, be able to successfully deal with the questions of how we raise taxes and how we spend our money until we deal with kind of a cultural norm that thinks that what we really should have, you know, are more condos for luxury second homes rather than housing for, you know, workforce people. But that's just who we're, you know, we have an economy and we have a culture that's really geared toward serving the few rather than creating a community where everyone is included and everyone is embraced. The question about trying to reallocate how we spend our criminal justice dollars, I think it's just not just reallocate, but it's just making a, you know, question about how does our criminal justice system work? Let's not even talk about the dollars, because I think we could spend the same amount of money. We, you know, a decade ago, New Hampshire attempted to do a justice reinvestment process where we would try to figure out the difference between people that we're mad at and people that we're afraid of. And we, you know, let's focus on the people we're afraid of and appropriately, you know, separate them from the rest of society. But for people that we're mad at, let's also figure out a way that we don't, you know, spend, you know, $40,000 a year to keep someone incarcerated with kind of questionable outcomes that we know if by a data-driven programming that are not as successful as other things. And rather than spend the $35,000, $38,000, $40,000 a year we spend on keeping somebody in jail, let's take a portion of that money and invest that in keeping the person out of jail, if you will, to try to take steps to really truly rehabilitate people. You take a look at who's in our jails and prisons, and if you begin with people who have substance use disorders, you know, be that alcohol, there you begin to deal with, you know, deal with it from that perspective, from a harm reduction perspective. You can help immediately divert people from just idling away in cells marking time to actually helping people deal with their problems, their addictions, and try to make them useful people. The largest provider of mental health care services in the state of New Hampshire is the New Hampshire Department of Corrections. Because our prisons and jails have really become you know, storage places for people with mental illness. But unfortunately, you know, jails and prisons are not a therapeutic setting. They don't do anything to help address issues of mental health. This is not something that anyone I know who is involved in corrections wants or ever asked for. They didn't, you know, Helen Hanks never asked to be the number one provider of healthcare services in the state as the commissioner of corrections. And that is by default, because we have, you know, broken the promise that was made when we closed our large institutions that we would do community-based mental health care. We refused to provide the funding for that. And instead, we masked the problem by mental health problems. They're not really mental health problems. We'll just throw them in jail. And then they become criminal justice. We've criminalized many aspects of mental illness. We've criminalized many aspects of addiction. You know, we need to change that.
And do you see a path forward towards that vision with the, for instance, the most recent Commission on Law Enforcement Accountability, Equity, Community, and Transparency? Do you see a way forward with that?
A lot of what that commission did, and appropriately so, was kind of focus on issues relating to equity and law enforcement. And, you know, obviously, you know, it came out of the, you know, the horrors that we saw last year, you know, with the death of Mr. Floyd and others. This slowly come to be a recognition of the prevalence of unconscious bias amongst law enforcement. I think there's going to be an attempt to try to rectify that, not just law enforcement, but our criminal justice system. I know that there'll be proposals that will require, you know, unconscious bias training, not just for members of law enforcement, for members of corrections, for the members of the judiciary itself. We've never come to have an honest conversation about race in our society, never had an honest conversation about race in our state. And it's long overdue, and we'll never achieve the beloved community that we all kind of partly aspire to, I think, until we have that conversation and how we recognize that the inequities that exist in our society. I think there'll also be other things that we'll do. I think we'll see a movement toward providing police body-worn cameras and dash cameras. The one thing that we've come to understand, it's really been a revelation on how prevalent it seems that police misconduct has been the presence of cameras that have caught this. Otherwise, no one would ever have known that. And while they don't work in every situation, I think the science has been that overall, the presence of body-worn cameras as part of our law enforcement equation puts everybody on their best behavior. It puts members of law enforcement and also puts members of the public, because it's as though we're all on our best behavior. Someone else is going to watch us. So we're going to, it can help de-escalate situations that otherwise would not be in place. And I think that it's time. I think New Hampshire is going to step up to try to, address that. I know that there's other things that we can deal that we'll talk about, criminal justice reform. One of the huge ones, I think, that we need to recognize is that the question of cannabis shouldn't even be a criminal justice matter. I mean, we look around in New Hampshire, we're an island of prohibition in a sea of, states in the province of people who adult recreational use of cannabis is accepted as a norm. It's normalized as though we, the same way we treat alcohol. We don't need to treat it as a criminal justice matter. We can treat it as a public health matter, certainly, but it makes absolutely no sense that we have laws in the state of New Hampshire where if somebody, goes, I'm in Hampton, if somebody drives 5 miles to Salisbury where there's a, adult recreational cannabis store and purchases some, cannabis gum, gummy bears or whatever they are,
cookies
or cigarette, that's fine, that they're perfectly allowed to use that to purchase it. And yet if they come back to, bring it back to their home and share a cookie with their spouse, that's considered a felony. That's right. Drug trafficking. One could be subject to years in jail and thousands of dollars of fine. I mean, I will acknowledge and grant that that's right now they're, there's that's not taking place on a regular basis, but we still expend an inexcusable amount of funds on trying to prohibit cannabis. It's part of the war on drugs that, I think we all learn the history of it, that it has, certainly there's a lot of racial roots. The racism is at the heart of many of the drug prohibition laws in the state, in this country, and it's time to reform that. So we're looking at trying to, I think that there'll be efforts to try to legalize cannabis. At least there'll be efforts to try to, extend the decriminalization to truly make it a decriminalization, just to say we just won't have any laws on the use or possession of cannabis. It will still remain outlawed as far as it won't be part of commerce. But that may be the incremental next incremental step that we will take before we get to a situation where one can engage in commerce and perhaps capture revenue for, you know, akin to what we do with alcohol now.
Thank you, Rennie. So we don't have a lot of time left, so I do want to quickly pivot and ask you about one specific bill that you are a sponsor of, which is the Own a Judge bill. Could you speak a little bit about that in the 1 or 2 minutes that we have left?
Wow. Yeah. Own a Judge is a woman who was enslaved by the family of our first president, George Washington. She gained her own freedom by walking out of what was then the presidential mansion in Philadelphia, escaping from the family of our first president to Portsmouth, New Hampshire, where she lived the rest of her life as a fugitive, but did so. She made her own freedom. And in many ways, I think Own a Judge kind of captures that what we would aspire to have someone do it, you know, someone who just led the example of freeing herself. The fact that the president of the United States at that time sent out, the equivalent of ICE, the customs office in Portsmouth, consulted with the Treasury Department to try to get his slave back. I think we need to learn our history, and also I want to judge as someone who we should lift up. We know a lot about the president of the first president of the United States. We should also know about the people he enslaved and when what took place. And so this bill that is proposed would recognize and lift up and celebrate the life of Own a Judge. In many ways, you know, New Hampshire was a sanctuary for people who were oppressed by the president of the United States these days, and that she found that there. So that's part of what we're trying to do.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that information, Rennie. I really appreciate it.
And thank you for offering that bill. I think you have done this often over the years, where you've had a bill that wasn't so much a policy change, but that maybe created a day of recognition. And those are very good tools for prompting the kind of learning that you're describing. I was very glad to see Representative Casey Connolly's bill being offered again this year that would commemorate the Dover Mill Girls, the first women's led labor strike in the country, I think, right here in where I live in Dover, New Hampshire.
Own a Judge represents kind of a symbol, one of the birth defects of the United States itself.
Good way to put it.
You know, too great are, you know, the enslavement of Africans and the genocide of Native Americans. And I think, you know, if we want to have a society that's based upon equity, that's based upon justice, we have to acknowledge the past and be aware of that so that we can work together to create a future for all of us.
Representative Rennie Cushion, you are a champion for criminal justice reform, for safe water and air, for telling the true history of ourselves. And now you are also in an additional important leadership role in a very pivotal time in our history and our life as a state. So for all of those reasons, thank you so, so much for your work and for setting aside time to be with us on State House Watch Radio. You're a great way to start off our program year.
Well, I just want to say thank you to you, Megan. Thank you to Grace. And thank you to the AFSC. And thank you to State House Watch. As I tell people, I read State House Watch every week so that I can find out what's going on in the legislature, even though I am a legislator myself. And it's a very, you know, it's a very valuable service that you provide. And, you know, the AFSC is always there as an anchor for the forces of justice in the state of New Hampshire.
Well, that wraps up our first episode of State House Watch Radio for the 2021 legislative season. What did you think, Grace? That was your first one.
I thought it was pretty great. I'm really excited to be working with our incredible bevy of new co-hosts, partners in this show with us. And I just think it's really incredible that in this world of Zoom, we're still relying on radio to keep us connected and informed. So I want to thank our viewers for joining us this week, and we welcome you to join us again. Our show airs weekly on Mondays, so we welcome your viewership, your comments, your questions, and your suggestions. So please feel free to email us at afscnewhampshire@afsc.org. And just a heads up that our show next week will be airing on January 18th, which is also Martin Luther King Day, and it will be with Jennifer Duby and 350newhampshire.org.
And as we said in our newsletter last week, the House and Senate are off to a somewhat slow start, but State House watchers are welcome to watch as the House standing committees host a whole bunch of orientation meetings this coming week. It might offer some interesting insight as to how the committees see their work and plan to vote and plan to receive testimony in the coming months. So you can find details about those committee orientation sessions in the House calendar, and you'll find multiple ways through Zoom and YouTube and by telephone to listen in. And the Senate's actually moving forward on hearings on a number of bills. None of them are on our AFSC priority list, but watching the proceedings can still give State House watchers a sense of what this year is going to be like. So as Grace mentioned, we are heading into Martin Luther King Day celebrations, which often cover multiple days, and this year are almost entirely online. So we encourage people to check out the website for the Martin Luther King New Hampshire Coalition. That's mlknh.org. And you'll see the website will be updated during the week, but you'll see some information there about several exciting opportunities. And then the Poor People's Campaign will be doing an in-person action at the State House on Monday morning with folks meeting nearby to decorate cars. So there's a caravan, they're calling it, and Jericho walk around the State House to lift up the Poor People's Campaign agenda. So more details about that on Facebook and in our newsletter. And then, Grace, why don't you tell folks about a webinar opportunity this week?
Yeah, absolutely. So AFSC is hosting a webinar for Alternatives to 911, which will be airing on January 14th at 8 p.m. So the webinar will be about the uses and abuses of calling 911 and ways that communities can respond to events and emergencies without necessarily involving the police. So registration can be found on the afsc.org website, as well as in our State House Watch newsletter, and it will be posted to our Facebook page later today.
Tell us about Renews.
Thanks, Maggie. Yes, Renews is a grassroots statewide coalition formed to fight for a just and equitable future for the Granite State. They're focused on economic and racial inequality, the coronavirus pandemic, and climate change. And they will be focusing on policy changes and priority bills for 2021. And so they will be launching on January 14th, 6:30 to 8 p.m. And everybody is invited to come and hear climate justice leaders as well as policymakers to talk about what these priorities will be for the coming year. And so we definitely invite you to join us so you can know how to get involved and stay informed about what's coming up for climate justice and environmental justice in New Hampshire in 2021.
Awesome. And AFSC is a part of that coalition with a number of other great organizations. So it will be good to be working together on these really important and intersectional issues, intersecting issues. So that wraps up our show. And thanks everybody for joining us. We will see you again soon.
Bye.
There's a bright side somewhere. There's a bright side somewhere. I'm gonna rest until I find it. There's a bright side somewhere. There's more joy somewhere. There's more joy somewhere. I'm gonna rest until I find it. There's more joy somewhere. There's more love somewhere. hundred more love somewhere. And I ain't gonna rest down until I find it. There's more love somewhere. There's more peace somewhere. There's more peace somewhere. I'm gonna rest out until I find it. There's more peace somewhere. Talk to me. Side somewhere, there's a bright side somewhere. I'm gonna rest down until I find it. There's a bright side somewhere, there's more joy.